This is Violent Adventures with Rachel Barton Pine, episode 42 for July 8, 2008. And welcome to Violent Adventures. This is Rachel Barton Pine, and today I'm going to be exploring Lalo's Symphony Espanol with my good friend and fellow violinist Jesus Florido, who I guess is my first repeat guest to Violent Adventures. It was just so much fun to go over this famous concerto with Jesus because he brings a lifetime of experience with Spanish and South American music, telling me all about the inflections and the rhythms and how this piece should really be played in a more authentic style to bring the music to life. Some of it I was already doing correctly, and a few spots I was like, ah, that's how it should be. So I know you're going to have fun checking this out. It's kind of like I'm getting a lesson. So maybe a little bit embarrassing, but hey, I'm willing to be embarrassed just for you. By the way, be sure to go to rachelbartonpine.com and sign up for the Violin Adventures e-zine. Not only do you get a free subscription to the e-zine, where I write about my adventures from the road and all kinds of other interesting stuff, but you also get a few free, exclusive, instantly downloadable tracks, including some of my live performances and also some special extra cuts from some of my CDs. Well, now let's go pull out some inquiries from my inbox. This is another question from a fellow Violinist.com member, Ron Gorthius. I'm sorry, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, Ron, G-O-R-T-H-U-I-S. That's what his last name is. And Ron asks whether I give lessons. Well, I don't have a private studio. I think I've mentioned this before on Violin Adventures that, you know, I'm just on the road so much and my schedule is way too erratic, and I feel like if I had a permanent student where I was their main violin teacher, that I just wouldn't be doing as good a job as I would want to be with that student, because I just wouldn't be able to spend time with them consistently enough. So very disappointing, you know. I love teaching. I would love to have students that I saw every week, but you just can't do it all. I would love to be a member of an orchestra and play Mahler symphonies every weekend, but then I wouldn't be able to travel the world and play concertos. So, you know, you have to make choices and sacrifices. Definitely my life plan is to retire gracefully from the stage when I'm in my 70s or 80s, whenever I start to lose my edge a little, and then I'm going to teach till I'm in my 90s or whenever I drop dead, you know, hopefully teach right up till that moment, just like Joseph Gingold. You know, why not? I mean, there's no such thing as retirement for a true musician, I don't think. I do give one-on-one private lessons on a supplemental basis where, you know, maybe it's a student of a friend of mine or even somebody that got in touch with me through email who's passing through town and they want a coaching on a particular piece or because a particular contest is coming up or they, you know, just want to get some advice like a personal master class. Certainly don't have very much time to ever do that, but every once in a while the stars are in alignment and the schedules are able to coordinate and I'm able to work with someone, and it's always, I'm just so wonderful to be able to do that and hopefully give a little bit of useful advice. So, you know, don't ever hesitate to drop me a line and see if we can work something out. Chances are pretty slim, but, you know, chances are completely zero if you don't try, right? So that's the scoop on that. Thanks for the great question, Ron. If you want to be featured on Violin Adventures, just send me an email to rachelbartonpine@aol.com, and you can either type up your question, or if you actually want your voice to be heard, you can attach an MP3 with you saying your question. And in fact, next week's inquiry from my inbox is going to be our very first MP3 question. That's going to be really cool. So I look forward to hearing from you. Now it's time for this week's random musical thought. It's actually the random musical thought of my publicist. It's the tagline at the bottom of every one of her emails, of which I get at least one a day. And so I see it so often, I thought I just had to share it with you. It's actually a saying of Plato. So now we're going way back. Plato says, "Music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything." Wow. You know? It might be from antiquity, but truer words have never been spoken, and I don't think anybody could say it better today. So here is Jesus and me jamming on Lalo's Symphony Espanol. Enjoy.
It's May 27th, and I'm here in Los Angeles with my friend Venezuelan violinist Jesus Florido, and it occurred to me that it would be really great to get his opinion about some of the controversial passages from Lalo's Symphony Espanol. In other words, how should the rhythms really be executed? Plus, anything else you might have to say about this great piece. So, welcome back to Violin Adventures, Jesus.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me back.
So, where shall we start?
Oh, there's so much to cover here. For instance, see, dum bum bi, ba ba bum, ba ba bum.
So actually, not da 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 da.
No, it's no.
Really?
No. Ba ba da di da di da da. Yeah, exactly.
And just
to make we have it on record that always the 2/8 lead into the quarter.
Yada.
Ta 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 ta.
Oh, I see. So the emphasis should still be on the quarter,
but the 2/8 lead into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not exactly square rhythm.
No, it's not square at all.
This is
a French trying to write Spanish music, you know. And so sometimes because of notation issues and different interpretations through the years, the actual rhythms get lost. And I say, you know, a lot of Spanish music is like jazz in the sense that you write it a particular way because that's the only way you have to write it. But that's not necessarily the way it is performed.
Well, what about this opening one?
Like,
exactly. Should this be, like, really fast, or
I like it fast. Ta-da-da-da!
Okay,
yeah.
So.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, and then we have this.
Don't slow down. Triplets always push back. Remember that vision of you trying to run and somebody holding your shirt. So kind of cartoonish.
So the triplets actually are not leaning forward.
They're pushing back.
Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Triplets push back always.
All right. I should have said this earlier, but just a little disclaimer, which is that I haven't practiced this any time recently.
Oh no! Oh, come on. So.
Okay, and then we have this. Da, yada, yada, da. So, how should one do these? Yada, da.
Yeah, always, you know, exactly the way you sang it. Da, di, dum, di, da, da.
Kind of setting that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because that slight change makes such a gigantic difference in the melodic line. You know, it has a much beautiful delivery.
All right, then we've got virtuoso stuff on and on, arpeggios and different stuff. And Oh, yeah, this is coda. So how should it should be dum ba dum ba or dum ba yum ba yum.
Yeah, exactly. Dum ba ram ba.
And these also with the same.
Yes, exactly. You see, once you play this triplet's heavy, the setup to the next passage with the 16th is just so incredibly brilliant.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, because then this sparks and it's even more virtuosic. You know? Yeah, it's beautiful.
All right. Then we have this little thing, which has all these humiolas, where it's like threes over bars of two, or over two bars.
Yes.
So, I'm just wondering where the emphases should be. Yeah. Triplets that would be heavy and spread, or is that something different now?
It is something different now because da di ba ba da, you know, so this single eighth note becomes a lot more important than what people dismiss it, because this single eighth note da da bam bi bam bam ba, and it takes a whole different shape.
Let's try. Oh, that is
It's just not a better way to write it.
And then these accents should be very prominent.
Very prominent. Very prominent, because that established the big beat. What I call the big beat.
And it's interesting because they're on the second beat for this passage, but then actually just a few bars later they're on the third beat.
They become the third beat, yeah. Yeah.
So is that typical?
Yeah. Well, it's just, because you play with it. You know, first on the second beat, then on third beat, then on the second beat.
Oh, yeah, and then look, it goes back to the second.
Yeah.
It's on the third of each.
So you have to think of this run.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. But if you think where this music comes from, which is what I usually tell everybody when I'm working on a specific piece, where does this come from? This is a tarantella. The tarantella is not necessarily Spanish. I mean, Italian. It was also from the northern of Spain, or the south of France. So it has that kind of a taka 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 taka. So that's what they vary the accents, because when people are dancing to this, if you put the accent all the time in the same place, it's just not fun.
Oh, kind of boring.
It's very boring. So you play with the accent, you know?
So actually having the accent change its location in this whole section is really what brings it to life.
It's what brings it to life, absolutely. And what most people dismiss, or they try to play it, but they don't understand what's going on.
So, yeah, I think a lot of people are, you know, I mean, these notes are not easy.
By the time
you play the notes, you forget all about the accents.
You forget about all the accents, absolutely. But that's what I tell them, play slow. You know, practice it slow and plan the accents in it. And
probably even when somebody's practicing for cleanliness and evenness and intonation, they should put the accents in even from the very beginning of learning the piece.
From the very beginning of learning the piece.
So that it can become ingrained where they are.
I absolutely preach that.
Then we have this whole section where it goes back and forth between slow and fast and slow and fast. Mm-hmm. Is this something typical or was this a...
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it's more concentrated. Remember that this is a guy who's listening to Spanish folk music, and then he's going back to Paris and say, oh, let me write something of what I remember that I've heard. So it has element, definitely. This is one of the most folk-influenced pieces that he wrote. Well, I mean, most of the pieces that he wrote are very folk-influenced.
Yeah.
You know, and him and Sanson, I mean, have, you know, the same experience. Even Bizet, you know, I mean, writing one of the greatest Spanish operettas ever written, you know, a French composer, you know. So
all the great Spanish music was written by French and Russian.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because these people understood the folk music so well that they took it to heart. For them, sometimes we tend to look at our own folk music as something that we take for granted. And when we have somebody from another country that comes and listens to it,
and to them, it's exotic.
Oh my God, it's like me and bluegrass, you know? Why do I love bluegrass so much? Because bluegrass is world music to me.
Ah, that's so funny.
You know?
Yeah,
and then most Americans look at bluegrass and they go, hey, they take it for granted. And so, I mean, I totally understand Lalo in the way that that he fell in love with Spanish music.
So this whole section where it has the Is this like more of a ballad, or what would this? Because if this is a tarantella, how does that fit into the picture?
Well, this is more what we will call a danzón, you know, which is a slow dance and very sexy. And every time you have this da 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 da, you know, it's almost like these, you know. Every time you have these, you know, there's just a little slower, so they write it on instead of a triplet.
So should it be the a tempos are subito, suddenly, or should the previous passage lead into them? In other words, and then back to tempo,
yeah, back to tempo. Yeah, exactly.
Well, which one?
No, the second one. The second one. I'm sorry.
Okay,
it always leads into the new tempo. It's almost, I will almost dare to say that it's almost like the 4/16th notes are already in the new tempo.
Like a pickup.
Like a pickup, yeah.
Even in the slow tempo.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So then the triplet is actually much quicker than the eighth.
Much, much quicker. Yes, absolutely.
Two, three. Wow, not at all like it's printed. Because
yeah,
it's not
on the downbeat. Exactly.
One, two, three, four.
That's the way you play it.
So spread.
Yeah, it is spread.
And then a tempo. standing in there.
Exactly. Absolutely, and the other piece that I make a lot of reference to is the De Falla Seven Popular Songs. Mm-hmm. Because, especially the slow dances that he has, every time you have that, is excuse my singing, but it's that flamenco thing, that kind of a Middle Eastern Arabic Moor influence that the Spanish had. It just went all the way to France because the historic background that Spain has, you know.
All right. Well, then the rest is kind of more of the same. And then that brings us to the third movement. With this rhythm that nobody plays the printed version.
Nobody plays
it. Every master class my little sister who's at college gave me a good idea from her like ear training class, mm-hmm. that if you have a word, then it's easier to make people do the right rhythm. And what did she say? It was like, chocolate cupcake.
Because
you wouldn't go chocolate cupcake. That makes the three.
Oh,
not that either of us even eat chocolate.
No,
it works.
It works.
But actually, most of the recordings of this piece by every famous violinist from the last generation, from two generations ago, that you can find, they do da ya dum bum ba ya dum.
Yeah, because they're trying to straighten it out. They're trying to make it straight, and it's not straight.
So it actually should be exactly 1, 2, 3, 1.
And,
two.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's what's fun about it. I remember the first time I played this piece, I was in the master class, and I played this for I'm not going to name the teacher because we had a fight on this particular very well known teacher. And then she said, No, you're swinging it. And I go, like, that's what's on the page. I'm not swinging. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. And this is a, this type of dance actually is very, the Spanish influenced the Cuban a lot. And if we can trace cha-cha-cha to this.
Hmm.
I mean, if we follow the lineage of the dance as we go, you know.
Well, what would this dance be called? What is that?
Well, I mean, the Cubans call it danzón, you know. Everybody calls it a little bit different, but cha-chas came from that. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 2, boom, dun, ti, 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 ti. Or even the later movements, you know, that he comes, he uses a lot of those dances that at the time also were influenced by the Spanish or the Latin American Spanish that were coming back to study in France.
And bringing their
absolutely
music from the New World.
The music from the New World, which basically was Spanish music and African music combined, you know, together in the little, you know, cooking pot, and then
some
brought back to Europe.
Native American music as
Oh,
well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I love playing pieces as this, because the rhythmic history of the piece is so rich. Mm. And then you can trace every rhythm. I mean, if we do a serious research on this, I mean, we can trace it very clearly to a very specific time in history. Absolutely. And even making that triplet as heavy as you can, it just gives it that the piece just swings.
So even though we're not actually hearing all three notes of the triplet,
yeah.
So the third note should also be kind
yes.
of held.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Wow, that's like totally the opposite of people.
Totally the opposite. I know. Yeah. But that's what I call the white version.
Oh, let's not go there.
Hey, come on, you're not. You're in disguise.
All right, then we have this beautiful...
Paritiro,
easier because at least you...
You know, it's just, you have to hold it dearly, you know, like you don't want to let it go. And that, you know, the audience, trust me, the audience will respond to this so much. You get engaged, you get their ears engaged into the music right away because there's nothing taken for granted. You know, it's not an automatic pilot. Which is what I usually tell my students. There, you're playing automatic pilot. You're playing everything, and there's no drive into each little rhythmic nuance that the music might have.
And then you have this 6/8 where it kind of is a hemiola again. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Even though it's written 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
So again, where are the best emphases?
This 8th note, you can play a little more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can't play this if I practiced.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. But
so
you see,
the downbeat always.
If you feel the 8th note, just playing that 8th note fully to its entire value, it's just adds a whole different dimension on the phrase.
And now we have it reversed because now it's 1, 2, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, but with
again.
A tie. So 1, 2, 2, 3, 1, 2, 2, 3.
Yeah.
That's very funky,
no downbeat,
actually.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how that should be emphasized. Because it's so easy to fall into the trap of going 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. No, it's almost a... Yeah, you have to feel almost like the downbeat, the first beat is always empty. There's a, even though you're playing it.
Ah,
you
so
see
actually
what I mean?
It's... Dum, ba, da, 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 da.
Exactly.
And that one also?
Yeah. Yeah, so when you play here, you see, it leads so beautifully into the next passage.
Yeah.
But I remember my father telling me when I was a kid, every time we were playing any type of Latin folk music, he would say, don't ever forget, there's no downbeat. Don't play on the downbeat. That was, never play on one. And now that I'm looking at, you know, pieces like this, I go like, oh, look, like my daddy said, there's no downbeat. So, I mean, even though, yes, it is a note on the downbeat, but it's not, the accent is not there. The note is just a passing tone.
Well, except for a place like this. One,
exactly.
Three,
well,
three,
then you go back into it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is just a specific types of dances, I'm just saying. And this applies to it so beautifully. That,
and this is actually kind of dancey, so...
Yeah. Uh-huh. Even on the tie, yum, bow. Even
oh,
you can play
see.
Heavier.
Oh, so should all of these also have
stronger
second beats?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
You see?
Yeah.
It just brings it a whole different...
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow, that's totally opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Believe me. I get weird looks when I talk about this. I'm, thank you so much for being so open-minded. But this is what it is. I mean, I'm...
Well, it's just a whole different swing to it.
Oh, absolutely.
And then with the accents again. And then some arpeggios that I'm not bothered to play right now.
No, it's okay. But you see, it's... Yeah.
it's from so one, fun. Three, I mean, one, two, three, and yeah. then one, two, three,
yeah.
one, two.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, I usually quote Mark O'Connor on this. He's the master of changing the beats on straight notes. You know, and in this discussions I've had with him many times, is, you know, you see straight, you know, 16 note triplets that should be pretty straight, and then once you put the axes in different places, it takes a whole different animal.
Now this thing, I see some triplets.
Yes.
So those triplets should be.
Yeah.
And then that's again,
yes.
setting that.
Yes.
And that's another one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So should that be even, or
yes. Absolutely. I mean, it makes me want to dance, you know. And if you look at even old cartoons from Hollywood back from the, you know, 30s and 40s, I mean, this is the music that we're using, and they were so influenced by them. And I wish we have better documentation of those sound scores that they wrote for those old cartoons, because there's some fantastic stuff that.
Are you talking about Latin American cartoons?
No. Hollywood, here in good old Los Angeles, California, because these guys were listening to so much other stuff that also were, you know, by the many cultures that are here in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, this Stravinsky said that he loved the time when he lived here because he went to all these bars to listen to music, folk music, and you know, there's pictures of Stravinsky back in East LA listening to Mexican music.
Interesting.
You know, so
interesting.
Yeah.
Now we come to the fourth movement, which is mm-hmm. this gorgeous aria.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of these things, but then I also see this thing that, you know, if it were a different country, we would call it a Scotch snap or a Hungarian snap or this da-da.
Which so might well be.
It seems like a lot of places have that snap.
Yes, absolutely. And who was first, though, we don't know.
But should it be the same thing where it's very tight?
Yes.
Okay.
For sure. I would even exaggerate that even more. Play this even. Yeah, but yeah, exactly, because it's so piano. Yeah, it's almost like you play with you're singing with your mouth closed, you know. That kind of almost like a lullaby. You know, like Nana from the Seven Popular Songs. That it's just a little lullaby.
So with this movement, it's so dramatic in its scope. I actually have come up with a little story in storyline. I feel like this is like the tragic heroine, you know, saying that her love has deserted her or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's really sad. And then over here, she's like very angry. Like,
yes,
fiery.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
I love that. Major key. And to me, this is like the memory of better times.
Oh, absolutely.
Like remembering how much she loved him and so.
Just a couple of things. You see the difference here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is even faster than we've previously been. You know, even more, almost an accent on it.
When it's double dotted.
When it's double dotted, you know. And then the other thing that's very interesting in this next passage is that when you have these two separate eighth notes, they almost, if you think of them as dragging a little bit, dee-da-da, bam, bam, bam. Doesn't that remind you of...
Yeah.
So it has the same feel. Yeah, even more separate eighth notes. Yeah.
A little bit of the dance.
Yeah. Yes. It is a dance. Yeah.
There it is. It's hiding.
It is hiding.
Yeah.
I
never saw that in there.
You never saw that. No, I'm always, I mean, I guess it's my own nature that always, even with Bach, I'm always like obsessed about finding the dance in it. Because... we must never forget that these guys were listening to other music too, and for some reason we tried to separate them into individuals that didn't go out or didn't listen to the radio or didn't listen to the music that was playing in the square on Sundays.
Or go to the local pub
for a drink and jam on some tunes and stuff. And that influence is all there. And thank God with the new times and the way things are developed these days, everybody's like paying a little more attention. So I'm very hopeful that
hopefully
better interpretation.
This episode of Violin Adventures will help to
absolutely
change everybody's interpretation of
absolutely, absolutely.
So let's just finish
one
up here with the last movement. This is should we do yompa yompa yompa? Should we do?
Yeah, I like the accent more. I mean, more on the first eighth note. Ta-dum, pa-dum, pa-dum, pa-ta-ta-pi,
and then that, that one, one, two, three.
Yeah.
That should be the heavy
yes,
one again,
exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. This is such a fun movement if you just put a little bit of emphasis on what's actually on the page. And you're right. Everybody plays this one gigantic trill, and I go like, but there's actually an implied rhythm there that goes with the winds as you hear this, you know.
Then we have plenty of 16th notes.
Yes.
And then, where's the secondary? Ah, here it is.
Absolutely.
One, two, three.
Beautiful. Very nice.
So pretty. I love that melody.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful... This entire piece is just a... It's a fantastic trip, musical trip, with so many things in it, you know?
Oh, and then you have this virtuosic stuff at the end, and that's the hardest thing, to keep the sort of groove going. Yes. You have all the left-hand pits, four-note chords, and all this junk, but let's see what we can do. So it would be...
Exactly.
And that's not...
No. Yeah. Yes.
All
right. Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Then I'm not going to play this squeaky part at the end.
No, that's fine. But it's fun, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing.
It's an amazing piece. It's a whole new piece.
Now I want to perform. I don't think I have it booked for next season, but I'm going to have to...
Yeah, well, call somebody.
Yeah, now that I have all these new ideas.
Yeah. So you have a change of heart. I want to play this other...
I could be one of those, like, diva soloists.
Exactly.
That, you thought I was playing the Brahms this week. I've changed my mind.
I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
You know, just get the librarian to pick out the music. Otherwise, I'm walking out of here.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jesus.
No, thank you. This is fun.
Well, that's it for today. Don't forget to go to rachelbartonpine.com to sign up for my free e-zine and get your free downloadable tracks. And don't forget to send me an email to rachelbartonpine@aol.com if you want your question to be featured on Violin Adventures. Thanks for listening, and I'm going to go back to practicing.
Rachel Barton Pine's podcast is produced by Windy Apple Studios. Rob Waller, engineer. www.windyapple.com